the flesh from the scrotum to the jaw. Fair is one more thing I've given up. Luther came back, and while the others rested, carved out the rectal tube with the deft motions of a man coring an apple. I hope I never have to ask myself that question. Luther reached into the paunch and lifted the entrails. He dug under the rib cage to the diaphragm and carefully cut around it until it was free. It is about love. What else but love? Can't I love what I criticize? Then he grabbed the windpipe and the gullet, eased them back, and severed them with one stroke of his little knife. It is about love. What else? They turned to Milkman. You want the heart? They asked him, quickly, before any thought could paralyze him. Milkman plunged both hands into the rib cage. Don't get the lungs now, get the heart. What else? He found it and pulled. The heart fell away from the chest as easily as yolk slips out of its shell. What else? What else? What else? Now Luther went back into the stomach cavity and yanked the entrails out altogether. They sucked up like a vacuum through the hole that was made at the rectum. He slipped the entrails into a paper bag while the others began cleaning up, hosing down, salting, packing, straightening. And then they turned the cat over to let the blood drain down on its own hide. What are you going to do with it? Asked Milkman. Eat him. A peacock soared away and lit on the hood of a blue Buick. Milkman looked at the bobcat's head. The tongue lay in its mouth as harmless as a sandwich. Only the eyes held the menace of the night. Hungry as he was, he couldn't eat much of Vernell's breakfast, so he pushed the scrambled eggs, hominy, fried apples around in the plate, gulped coffee, and talked a lot. And somehow, he had to get round to the purpose of his visit to Shalimar. You know, my grandfather came from somewhere near here. My grandmother, too. Did? From around here? What's their name? I don't know her maiden name, but her first name was Sing. Any of you ever know anybody with a name like that? They shook their heads. Sing? No, never heard of nobody named that. I had an aunt lived down this way, too, name of Pilot. Pilot dead. Ever hear of her? Ha! Sound like a newspaper headline. Pilot dead. She do any flying? No, P-I-L-A-T-E, pilot. P-I-L-A-T-E, that spell pilot, small boy said. No, nigger, not no pilot. Pilot, like in the Bible, dummy. He don't read the Bible. He don't read nothing. He can't read nothing. They tease small boy until Vernell interrupted them. You all hush. You say sing? She asked Milkman. Yeah, sing. I believe that was the name of a girl my gran used to play with. I remember the name 'cause it sounded so pretty. Gran used to talk about her all the time. Seemed like her folks didn't like her to play with the colored children from over this way. So her and my gran used to sneak off and go fishing and berry picking, you know what I mean? She'd have to meet her in secret. Vernell eyed Milkman carefully. This Sing girl was light-skinned with straight black hair. That's her, Milkman said. She was mixed, or Indian one. Vernell nodded. Indian, one of old Hetty's children. Hetty was all right, but she didn't like her girl playing with colors. She was a bird.
A what?
A bird. Belonged to the bird family, over by the ridge, near Solomon's Leap.
Oh, yeah, said one of the men. One of Susan Bird's people.
That's right. One of them. They never was too crazy about colored folks. Susan either.
Do they still live there? Asked Milkman.
Susan do. Right behind the ridge. Only house back in there with a brick front. She by herself now. All the others moved out so they could pass.
Can I walk it? He asked.
Most folks could, I reckon, said Omar. But after last night, I don't recommend it for you, he laughed. Can you drive a car through?
Part of the way you can, but the road is narrow and messy back up in there, said Vernell.
Horse, maybe, but not no car.
I'll make it. Might take me a week, but I'll make it, said Milkman.
Just don't carry no guns. Calvin cooled his coffee in his saucer, and you'll be all right.
They all laughed again.
Milkman thought about that. Guitar was out there someplace, and since he seemed to know everything Milkman was doing or getting ready to do, he'd also know he was going out to some ridge. He touched his swollen neck. He didn't want to go anywhere alone without a gun.
You ought to have a rest before you go trotting off anywhere, Omar said, looking at him.
There's a nice lady up the road a ways. She'd be proud to take you in.
The look in his eyes was unmistakable.
Pretty woman, too. Real pretty.
Vernell grunted, and Milkman smiled.
Hope she's got a gun, he thought.
She didn't, but she had indoor plumbing, and her smile was just like her name, Sweet, as she nodded her head to Milkman's query about whether he could take a bath. The tub was the newest feature in the tiny shotgun house, and Milkman sank gratefully into the steaming water. Sweet brought him soap and a boar's bristle brush and knelt to bathe him. What she did for his sore feet, his cut face, his back, his neck, his thighs, and the palms of his hands was so delicious he couldn't imagine that the lovemaking to follow would be anything but anticlimactic. If this bath and this woman, he thought, are all that come out of this trip, I will rest easy and do my duty to God, country, and the Brotherhood of Elks for the rest of my life. I will walk hot coals with a quart of kerosene in my hand for this. I will walk every railroad tie from here to Cheyenne and back for this. But when the lovemaking came, he decided he would crawl. Afterward, he offered to bathe her. She said he couldn't because the tank was small and there wasn't enough water for another hot bath.
Then let me give you a cool one, he said.
He soaked and rubbed her until her skin squeaked and glistened like onyx. She put salve on his face. He washed her hair. She sprinkled talcum on his feet. He straddled her behind and massaged her back. She put witch hazel on his swollen neck. He made up the bed. She gave him gumbo to eat. He washed the dishes. She washed his clothes and hung them out to dry. He scoured her tub. She ironed his shirt and pants. He gave her $50. She kissed his mouth. He touched her face. She said, please come back. He said, I'll see you tonight.
Chapter 12
At 4 o'clock, he knocked on the door of the only house back of the ridge with a brick front. Fresh and shining in the army fatigues, Sweet had washed and pressed. He had tramped along feeling ready for anything. But he didn't think Guitar would jump him in the daytime on a winding path, which they called a road, that cut through hilly land that was nevertheless tilled and had a smattering of houses and people. If he did confront him with anything other than a gun, Milkman was sure he could take him. But it would be best to get back before nightfall. He didn't know what was on Guitar's mind, but he knew it had something to do with the gold. If he knows I'm here, and where I have been, and what I did in each place, then he must know that I'm trying to get it, doing just what I said I would do. Why would he try to kill me before I got it, or even found out what happened to it? Most of it was a total mystery to him, but the part that was clear was enough to keep him alert and jittery all the way. The birdhouse sat on a neat lawn, separated by a white picket fence from the field grass on either side of the property. A child's swing dangled from a cedar tree. 4 little steps, painted blue, led up to the porch. And from the window, between fluttering curtains, came the smell of gingerbread baking. A woman who looked to be about his mother's age answered the door. "Miss Bird?" Milkman asked her. "Yes." "How are you?" "My name is, Macon, and I'm visiting here for a few days. I'm from Michigan, and I think some of my people lived here a long time ago. I was hoping you'd be able to help me." "Help you what?" She sounded arch, and Milkman had the distinct impression that this lady did not like the color of his skin. "Find them. I mean, find out about them. We're all split up, my family, and some folks in town thought you might know some of them." "Who's that, Susan?" Another woman's voice came from behind her. "Somebody to see me, Grace." "Well, why don't you ask him in? Don't make him state his business on the steps." Miss Bird sighed. "Please come in, Mr. Macon." Milkman followed her into a pleasant living room full up with sunshine. "Excuse me," she said. "I didn't mean to be rude. Please, have a seat." She motioned to a gray velvet wingback chair. A woman in a 2-piece print dress came into the room, clutching a paper napkin in her hand and chewing on something. "Who'd you say?" She addressed her question to Miss Bird, but ran inquisitive eyes over Milkman. Miss Bird held out a hand. "This is a friend of mine, Miss Long. Grace Long, Mr. How do you do?" Grace held out her hand to him. "Fine, thank you. Mr. Macon, is it?" "Yes." "Susan, perhaps Mr. Macon would like some refreshment." Miss Long smiled and sat on the sofa facing the gray chair. "Well, he just stepped foot in the door, Grace. Give me time." Miss Bird turned to Milkman. "Would you like a cup of coffee or some tea?" "Sure, thanks." "Which one?" "Coffee's all right." "You've got butter cookies, Susan. Give him some of those butter cookies." Miss Bird gave her friend a tired frown. "I'll just be a minute," she said to Milkman, and left the room. "Yes, well, did I hear you say you were visiting in these parts? We don't see too many visitors." Grace crossed her ankles. Like Susan Bird, she wore black laced shoes and cotton stockings. As she made herself comfortable, she inched her dress up a little. Yes, visiting.
You in the service?
Ma'am? Oh, no. I was hunting last night. Some friends lent me these.
He smoothed the seam Sweet had made in the fatigues.
Hunting? Oh, Lord, don't tell me you're one of them. I can't stand those hunting people. They make me sick. Always prowling around other people's property, day and night. They're shooting up the world. I tell my students, I'm a school teacher, you know. I teach over at the normal school. Have you seen it yet?
No, not yet.
Well, there's nothing to see, really. Just the school, like any other. But you're welcome to stop by. We'd be pleased to have you. Where are you from again?
Michigan.
I thought so. Susan.
She turned around.
He's from up north.
Then back to Milkman.
Where are you staying?
Well, nowhere yet. I just met a few people in town. And Susan Bird came in with a tray of coffee cups and a plate of wide, pale cookies.
He's from Michigan, said Grace.
I heard him.
How do you take your coffee?
Black.
Black? No cream or sugar at all? Asked Grace.
Wish I could do that. Maybe I could get back into a 12. But it's never going to happen now.
She pressed one hand on her hip and smiled at Milkman.
What did you want to see me about?
Susan Bird placed a mild but clear stress on the word me.
I'm trying to locate anybody who might have known my grandmother.
Her name was Singh.
Grace clapped her hands to her mouth and gave a little squeal.
Relatives. You all are relatives.
Milkman put his cup down.
Well, I'll be.
Grace's eyes were lit and dancing.
You've come to the right place, said Susan, but I doubt if I can help you any.
What are you talking about, Susan? Your mother was named Singh, wasn't she?
No, she wasn't, Grace.
And if you let me finish a sentence, you might learn something you don't know, too.
I thought you said my mother's name was Mary. M-A-R-Y. Mary.
Well, excuse me.
Susan turned to Milkman. My father, Crowell Bird, had a sister named Singh.
That must be her. My grandmother, Singh.
Did she marry a man named... I knew there was somebody in your family named Singh.
She didn't marry anybody that I know of, Susan interrupted them both.
Oh, this is really something. A stranger walks right into your house and he's your own, what, cousin?
I hate to say it, but this is a small world, isn't it?
You have got to visit my class, Mr. Macon.
Milkman joined Susan Bird in ignoring Grace Long.
Where did she live? He asked her.
The last time my father saw her, she was on a wagon headed for Massachusetts to a private school up there, a Quaker school.
Your people Quakers? You never told me that.
See, Mr. Macon, what your friends hide from you?
I bet she'd hide you, too.
And she never married?
Milkman couldn't take the time to acknowledge Grace's attentions.
Not anybody we heard of.
After she went to that Quaker school, they lost track of her. I believe they tried to locate her, mostly because my grandmother, her name was Hetty, she was so torn up about it.
I always believed the same thing my father believed, that she didn't want to be found after she left that school.
You know darn well she didn't, said Grace.
She probably started passing, like the rest of them, that's what.
She leaned toward Milkman. There used to be a lot of that, a lot of it.
Not so much nowadays, but there used to be a lot of them did it.
if they could. She shot a glance at Susan. Like your cousin, Susan. They're passing now. Lila, John, I know John is, and he knows I know he is. Everybody knows that, Grace. Mr. Macon doesn't know it. I saw John on the street in Maryville. Mr. Macon doesn't need to know it. He's not even interested. How do you know he's not? Because he said the woman he's looking for was his grandmother. And if she's his grandmother, she'd be too dark to... Susan Bird hesitated. Well, too dark to pass, wouldn't she? She flushed a little. Milkman ignored the question. And you say she lived in Massachusetts, right? Yes, Boston. I see. It looked like a dead end, so he decided to follow another line. Did you ever know or hear of a woman around here named Pilot? Pilot? No, never. Have you, Grace? Grace shook her head. No, and I've been here most of my life. I've been here all of mine, said Susan. Both my parents were born here, and so was I. Never been farther away than St. Philip's County. I have people in South Carolina, but I've never even been to visit them. That's because they're passing too, just like John. You couldn't visit them if you wanted to. Grace leaned over the plate of cookies and selected one. They're not the only family I have left. Susan was indignant. I hope not. It's a sad thing, Mr. Macon, when you're left without any people to claim you. I keep up with my family. I'm not married, you know. Not yet, anyway. But my family is very close. She gave him a meaningful look. Milkman turned his wrist and looked down to see what time it was. Oh, look at that, Grace pointed to his hand. What a good-looking watch. May I see it? Milkman stood up to hand it to her and remained standing. Look, Susan, it doesn't have a single number on it, just dots. Now how can anybody figure out what time it is from those dots? Susan rose too. You ever been down here before, Mr. Macon? No, this is my first visit. Well, I hope it won't be your last. How long will you be here? Oh, I think I'll get on back tonight, or tomorrow at the latest. He looked out the window. The sun was dropping. That soon? Asked Grace. Why don't you give him something to take with him, Susan? Would you like to take some butter cookies with you, Mr. Macon? No, thank you. You'll be happy to have them later. The woman was wearing him down. He smiled, though, and said, if you like. I'll fix a little package for you. Okay, Susan? She fled from the room. Susan managed a small smile. Wish you could stay and visit with us a while. Her words were as mechanical as her smile. So do I, he said. But, well, maybe I'll be back. That'd be nice. Sorry I couldn't be of any help to you. You have been. Have I? Oh, sure. You have to know what's wrong before you can find what's right. She smiled, a genuine smile then. It's important to you, is it, to find your people? Milkman thought about it. No, not really. I was just passing through, and it was just an idea. It's not important. Grace returned with a little parcel wrapped in white paper napkins. Here you are, she said. You'll appreciate this later on. Thank you. Thank you both. Nice meeting you. And you. He left the house feeling tired and off-center. I'll spend one more night here. And then leave, he thought. The car should be fixed by now. There's nothing here to know, no goal or any traces of it. Pilot lived in Virginia, but not this part of the state. Nobody at all has heard of her. And the Singh that lived here went to Boston, not Danville, Pennsylvania, and passed for white. His grandmother would have been too dark to pass. She had actually blushed, as though she discovered something shameful about him. He was both angry and amused, and wondered what Omar and Sweet and Vernell thought of Miss Susan Bird. He was curious about these people. He didn't feel close to them, but he did feel connected, as though there was some cord or pulse or information they shared. Back home, he had never felt that way, as though he belonged to any place or anybody. He'd always considered himself the outsider in his family, only vaguely involved with his friends. And except for guitar, there was no one whose opinion of himself he cared about. Once, long ago, he had cared what Pilot and Hager thought of him, but having conquered Hager and having disregarded Pilot enough to steal from her, all that was gone. But there was something he felt now, here in Shalimar and earlier in Danville, that reminded him of how he used to feel in Pilot's house. Sitting in Susan Bird's living room, lying with Sweet, eating with those men at Vernell's table. He didn't have to get over, to turn on, or up, or even out. And there was something more. It wasn't true what he'd said to Susan Bird, that it wasn't important to find his people. Ever since Danville, his interest in his own people, not just the ones he met, had been growing. Macon Dead, also known as Jake Somebody, Singh, who were they? And what were they like? The man who sat for 5 nights on a fence with a gun, waiting, who named his baby girl Pilot, who tore a farm out of a wilderness. The man who ate pecans on a wagon going north. Did he have brothers or sisters whom he left behind? Who was his mother, his father, and his wife? Was she the Boston Singh? If so, what was she doing on a wagon? Why would she go off to a northern private school on a wagon? Not a carriage or a train, but a wagon full of ex-slaves? Maybe she never got to Boston. Maybe she didn't pass. She could have changed her mind about school and run off with the boy she ate pecans with. And whoever she was, why did she want her husband to keep that awful name? To wipe out the past? What past? Slavery? She was never a slave. His slave past. And why didn't his own father and Pilot know any of their own relatives? Wasn't there any family to notify when the father died? Macon didn't ever try to get to Virginia. Pilot headed straight for it. Milkman opened the parcel Grace had fixed for him and took out a cookie. A little piece of paper fluttered to the ground. He picked it up and read, Grace Long, 40 Route 2, 3 houses down from the normal school. He smiled. That's why it took her so long to wrap up 4 cookies. He bit into one of them and sauntered along, crumpling the napkins and Grace's invitation into a wad. The questions about his family still knocked around in his head like billiard balls. If his grandfather, this Jake, was born in the same place his wife was, in Shalimar, why did he tell the Yankee he was born in Macon, thereby providing him with the raw material for the misnaming. And if he and his wife were born in the same place, why did Pilate and his father and Circe all say they met on that wagon? And why did the ghost tell Pilate to sing? Milkman chuckled to himself. That wasn't what he was telling her at all. Maybe the ghost was just repeating his wife's name, sing. And Pilate didn't know it because she never knew her mother's name. After she died, Macon Dead wouldn't let anybody say it aloud. That was funny. He wouldn't speak it after she died. And after he died, that's all he ever said. Her name. Jesus. Here he was walking around in the middle of the 20th century, trying to explain what a ghost had done. But why not, he thought. One fact was certain. Pilate did not have a navel. Since that was true, anything could be. And why not ghost as well? He was near the road leading to the town now, and it was getting dark. He lifted his wrist to look at his watch and remembered that Grace had not given it back to him. Damn, he murmured aloud. I'm losing everything. He stood still, trying to make up his mind whether to go back for it now or later. If he went now, he'd be forced to return in deep darkness, totally defenseless, before a hit from guitar. But it would be a real bother to have to come all the way back here, where no car could make it, tomorrow, when he was going to leave. But guitar might be... I can't let him direct and determine what I do, where I go, or when. If I do that now, I'll do it all my life, and he'll run me off the earth. He didn't know what to do, but decided finally that a watch was not worth worrying about. All it could do was tell him the time of day, and he really wasn't interested. Wiping cookie crumbs from his mustache, he turned into the main road, and there, outlined in cobalt blue, stood Guitar. Leaned, rather, against a persimmon tree. Milkman stopped, surprised at the calm, steady beat of his heart. The complete absence of fear. But then, Guitar was cleaning his fingernails with a harmless match stick. Any weapon he had would have to be hidden in his denim jacket or pants. They looked at each other for a minute. No, less. Just long enough for the heart of each man to adjust its throb to the downbeat of the other. Guitar spoke first. My man. Milkman ignored the greeting. Why, Guitar? Just tell me why. You took the gold. What gold? There wasn't any gold. You took the gold. The cave was empty, man. I got down on my stomach and looked in that pit. I put my hands... You took the gold. You're crazy, Guitar. Angry, never crazy. There wasn't any gold. Milkman tried hard not to shout. I saw you, motherfucker. Saw me what? Take the gold. Where? In Danville. You saw me with gold in Danville? I saw you with gold in Danville. You've got to be kidding. What was I doing with it? Shipping it? Shipping it? Yeah. Why the game, man? You just greedy, like your old man, or what? Guitar's eyes rested on the last butter cookie in Milkman's hand. He frowned and began to breathe through his lips. Guitar, I didn't ship no gold. There wasn't any gold to ship. You couldn't have seen me. I saw you, baby. I was in the station. What fucking station? The freight station in Danville. Milkman remembered then. Going to look for Reverend Cooper, looking all over for him, then going into the station house to see if he'd gone, and there helping a man lift a huge crate onto the weighing platform. He started to laugh. Oh, shit. Guitar, that wasn't no gold. I was just helping that man lift a crate. He asked me to help him lift a big old crate. I did, and then I split. Guitar looked at the cookie again, then back into Milkman's eyes. Nothing changed in his face. Milkman knew it sounded lame. It was the truth, but it sounded like a lie, a weak lie, too. He also knew that in all his life, Guitar had never seen Milkman give anybody a hand, especially a stranger. He also knew that they'd even discussed it, starting with Milkman's not coming to his mother's rescue in a dream he had. Guitar had accused him of selfishness and indifference, told him he wasn't serious, and didn't have any fellow feeling, none whatsoever. Now he was standing there, saying that he willingly, spontaneously, had helped an old white man lift a huge, heavy crate. But it was true. It was true. And he'd prove it. Guitar, why am I here? If I was shipping gold back home, why am I here dressed like this? Would I be roaming around in the country like a fool with a crate of gold off somewhere? Would I? What the fuck would I do that for and then come here? Maybe you shipped the gold here, you jive ass. What the fuck are you talking about? I looked. I saw it. You hear me? I drove down there, followed you there, because I had a funny feeling that you were pulling a fast one. I wasn't sure, but I felt it. If I was wrong, I'd help you get it. But I wasn't wrong. I got into Danville that afternoon. I drove right past the freight depot. And there you were, in your little beige suit. I parked and followed you into the station. When I got there, I saw you shipping it, giving it to the man. I waited until you left, and I went back in and asked the cracker if my friend, he slurred the word, had shipped a crate to Michigan. The man said no. Just one crate on the load, he said. Just one crate. And when I asked him where it was going, all he could remember was Virginia. Guitar smiled. The bus you caught wasn't headed for Michigan. It was headed for Virginia, and here you are. Milkman felt whipped. There was nothing to do but let it play. Was my name on the crate? I didn't look. Would I send a crate of gold to Virginia? Gold, man? You might. You did. Is that why you tried to kill me? Yes. Because I ripped you off? Because you ripped us off. You are fucking with our work. You're wrong. Dead wrong. The dead part is you. Milkman looked down at the cookie in his hand. It looked foolish, and he started to throw it away, but changed his mind. So, my day has come? Your day has come, but on my schedule. And believe it, I will run you as long as there's ground. Your name is Macon, but you ain't dead yet. Tell me something. When you saw me in the station, with the crate, why did you back off and hide? Why didn't you just walk up to me? It could have been settled there. I told you I had this funny, funny feeling that I was going to cut you out, cut us out. Yes. And you believe I did?
Yes.
Back there in the woods, you were angry,
yes.
Now you're going to wait till the gold comes?
Yes.
And I pick it up.
You won't be able to pick it up.
Do me a favor. When it gets here, check it first to see if there's gold in it. First or last, but before you haul it all the way back home, don't worry yourself about it. One more thing. Why the message? Why'd you warn me with a message at the store?
You're my friend. It's the least I could do for a friend.
My man, I want to thank you.
You're welcome, baby.
Milkman slipped into Sweet's bed and slept the night in her perfect arms. It was a warm, dreamy sleep, all about flying, about sailing high over the earth, but not with arms stretched out like airplane wings, nor shot forward like Superman in a horizontal dive, but floating, cruising, in the relaxed position of a man lying on a couch reading a newspaper. Part of his flight was over the dark sea, but it didn't frighten him because he knew he could not fall. He was alone in the sky, but somebody was applauding him, watching him, and applauding. He couldn't see who it was. When he awoke the next morning and set about seeing to the repair of his car, he couldn't shake the dream and didn't really want to. In Solomon's store, he found Omar and Solomon shaking sacks of okra into peck baskets, and he still felt the sense of lightness and power that flying had given him. "Got a belt for your car," said Omar. "Ain't new, but it ought to fit."
"Hey, that's good. Thanks, Omar. You leaving us right away?"
"Yeah, I have to get on back."
"You see that bird woman all right?"
"Yeah, I saw her."
"She help you any?"
Omar wiped the okra fuzz from his hands onto his trousers.
"No, not much."
"Well, King Walker said he'd be down this morning and put the belt on. You probably ought to get a good checkup on that car once you get on the road."
"I plan to."
"Sweet give you any breakfast?" asked Solomon.
"She tried, but I wanted to get over here early to see about the car."
"What about a cup of coffee? There's a full pot in back."
"No, thanks. I think I'll walk around a little till he comes."
It was 6:30 in the morning, and the town was bustling as though it were high noon. Life and business began early in the South, so the coolest part of the day could be taken advantage of. People had already eaten, women had already washed clothes and were spreading them on bushes, and in a few days, when the school in the next town opened, children at this hour would already be walking, running over the roads and fields to class. Now they were sauntering about, doing chores, teasing cats, throwing bread to stray chickens, and some of them were playing their endless round games. Milkman could hear them singing and wandered off toward them and the huge cedar that reared up over their heads. Again, their sweet voices reminded him of the gap in his own childhood as he leaned against the cedar to watch them. The boy in the middle of the circle, it seemed always to be a boy, spun around with his eyes closed and his arm stretched out, pointing. Round and round he went until the song ended with a shout, and he stopped, his finger pointing at a child Milkman could not see. Then they all dropped to their knees, and he was surprised to hear them begin another song at this point, one he had heard often on all his life That old blues song Pilot sang all the time. Oh, sugar man, don't leave me here. Except the children sang, Solomon, don't leave me here. Milkman smiled, remembering Pilot, hundreds of miles away. He was homesick for her, her house, for the very people he had been hell-bent to leave. His mother's quiet, crooked, apologetic smile, her hopeless helplessness in the kitchen. The best years of her life, from age 20 to 40, had been celibate, and aside from the consummation that began his own life, the rest of her life had been the same. He hadn't thought much of it when she told him, but now it seemed to him that such sexual deprivation would affect her, hurt her, in precisely the way it would affect and hurt him. If it were possible for somebody to force him to live that way, to tell him, you may walk and live among women, you may even lust after them, but you will not make love for the next 20 years, how would he feel? What would he do? Would he continue as he was? And suppose he were married and his wife refused him for 15 years. His mother had been able to live through that by a long nursing of her son, some occasional visits to a graveyard. What might she have been like had her husband loved her? And his father, an old man now, who acquired things and used people to acquire more things. As the son of Macon did the first, he paid homage to his own father's life and death by loving what his father had loved, property. Good, solid property, the bountifulness of life. He loved these things to excess because he loved his father to excess. Owning, building, acquiring. That was his life, his future, his present, and all the history he knew. That he distorted life, bent it, for the sake of gain, was a measure of his loss at his father's death. As Milkman watched the children, he began to feel uncomfortable. Hating his parents, his sisters, seemed silly now. And the skim of shame that he had rinsed away in the bathwater after having stolen from Pilot returned. But now it was as thick and as tight as a call. How could he have broken into that house? The only one he knew that achieved comfort without one article of comfort in it. No soft, worn-down chair, not a cushion or a pillow, no light switch, no water running free and clear after a turn of a tap handle, no napkins, no tablecloth, no fluted plates or flowered cups, no circle of blue flame burning in a stove eye. But peace was there, energy, singing, and now his own remembrances. His mind turned to Hagar and how he had treated her at the end. Why did he never sit her down and talk to her honestly? And what ugly thing was it he said to her the last time she tried to kill him? And God, how hollow her eyes had looked. He was never frightened of her. He never actually believed that she would succeed in killing him, or that she really wanted to. Her weapons, the complete lack of cunning or intelligence even, of conviction in her attacks, were enough to drain away any fear. Oh, she could have accidentally hurt him, but he could have stopped her in any number of ways. But he hadn't wanted to. He had used her, her love, her craziness, and most of all, he had used her skulking, bitter vengeance. It made him a star, a celebrity in the blood bank. It told men and other women that he was one bad dude, that he had the power to drive a woman out of her mind, to destroy her, and not because she hated him, or because he had done some unforgivable thing to her, but because he had fucked her, and she was driven wild by the absence of his magnificent joint. His hog's gut, Lena had called it. Even the last time he used her imminent arrival and feeble attempt at murder as an exercise of his will against hers, an ultimatum to the universe. Die, Hager, die. Either this bitch dies or I do. And she stood there, like a puppet, strung up by a puppet master who had gone off to some other hobby. Oh, Solomon, don't leave me here. The children were starting the round again. Milkman rubbed the back of his neck. Suddenly he was tired. Although the morning was still new, he pushed himself away from the cedar and sank to his haunches. Jay, the only son of Solomon, come, Bubiyali, come. Everybody in this town is named Solomon, he thought wearily. In Solomon's general store, Luther Solomon, no relation, Solomon's leap. And now the children were singing, Solomon, don't leave me, instead of Sugar Man. Even the name of the town sounded like Solomon. Shalimar, which Mr. Solomon and everybody else pronounced Shalimon. Milkman's scalp began to tingle. Jay, the only son of Solomon? Was that Jake, the only son of Solomon? Jake. He strained to hear the children. That was one of the people he was looking for, a man named Jake, who lived in Shalimar, as did his wife, Sing. He sat up and waited for the children to begin the verse again. Come, Bubiyali, come, Bubitambe, it sounded like, and didn't make sense. But another line, Black Lady fell down on the ground, was clear enough. There was another string of nonsense words, and then threw her body all around. Now the child in the center began whirling, spinning, to lyrics sung in a different, faster tempo. Solomon and Reiner Belali Shalut. Solomon again? And Reiner? Reiner. Why did the second name sound so familiar? Solomon and Reiner. The woods, the hunt, Solomon's leap, and Reiner's gulch, places they went to or passed by that night they shot the bobcat. The gulch was where he heard that noise that sounded like a woman crying, which Calvin said came from Reiner's gulch, that there was an echo there that folks said was a woman named Reiner crying. You could hear her when the wind was right. But what was the rest? Belali, Shalut, Yaruba? If Solomon and Reiner were the names of people, the others might be also. The verse ended in another clear line. 21 children, the last one Jake. And it was at the shout of Jake, who was also, apparently, the only son of Solomon, that the twirling boy stopped. Now Milkman understood that if the child's finger pointed at nobody, missed, they started up again. But if it pointed directly to another child, that was when they fell to their knees and sang Pilate's song. Milkman took out his wallet and pulled from it his airplane ticket stub, but he had no pencil to write with, and his pen was in his suit. He would just have to listen and memorize it. He closed his eyes and concentrated, while the children, inexhaustible in their willingness to repeat a rhythmic, rhyming action game, performed the round over and over again. And Milkman memorized all of what they sang. Jake, the only son of Solomon, Kambubiale, Kambubitambe, whirled about and touched the sun. Come Konkiale, come Konkitambe, left that baby in a white man's house. Kambubiale, Kambubitambe, Hetty took him to a red man's house. Come Konkiale, come Konkitambe, black lady fell down on the ground. Kambubiale, Kambubitambe, threw her body all around. Come Konkiale, come Konkitambe, Solomon and Rhina, Bilali, Shalut, Yaroba, Medina, Muhammad, too, Nestor, Kalina, Saraka, Cake, 21 children, the last one, Jake. Oh, Solomon, don't leave me here, cotton balls to choke me. Oh, Solomon, don't leave me here, buckra's arms to yoke me. Solomon done fly, Solomon done gone, Solomon cut across the sky, Solomon gone home. He almost shouted when he heard Hetty took him to a red man's house. Hetty was Susan Bird's grandmother on her father's side, and therefore Singh's mother too. And red man's house must be a reference to the birds as Indians. Of course, Singh was an Indian, or part Indian, and her name was Singh Bird, or more likely, Singh Bird. No, Singing Bird. That must have been her name, originally, Singing Bird. And her brother, Crow Bird, was probably Crow Bird, or just Crow. They had mixed their Indian names with American-sounding names. Milkman had four people now that he could recognize in the song. Solomon, Jake, Rhina, and Hetty, and a veiled reference to Hetty's Indianness. All of which seemed to put Jake and Singh together in Shalimar, just as Circe had said they were. He couldn't be mistaken. These children were singing a story about his own people. He hummed and chuckled as he did his best to put it all together. Jake's father was Solomon. Did Jake whirl about and touch the sun? Did Jake leave a baby in a white man's house? No. If the Solomon don't leave me line was right, Solomon was the one who left, who flew away, meaning died or ran off, not Jake. Maybe it was the baby, or Jake himself, who was begging him to stay. But who was the black lady who fell down on the ground? Why did she throw her body all around? It sounded like she was having a fit. Was it because somebody took her baby first to a white man's house, then to an Indian's house? Rhina? Was Rhina the black lady still crying in the gulch? Was Rhina Solomon's daughter? Maybe she had an illegitimate child and her father? No. It's Solomon she's crying for, not a baby. Solomon, don't leave me. He must have been her lover. Milkman was getting confused, but he was as excited as a child confronted with boxes and boxes of presents under the skirt of a Christmas tree. Somewhere in the pile was a gift for him. Yet there were many, many missing pieces. Susan Bird, he thought. She would have to know more than she had told him. Besides, he had to get his watch back. He ran back to Solomon's store.